Good morning. Welcome to Wicked Part 2.
Also known as Wicked for Good.
Let's start with prayer. God be with you.
And also with you.
Loving God, we give you thanks for this day, for this opportunity to reflect together. We ask that you would fill our minds with wonder and imagination, that we may see you in unexpected places. In God's holy name we pray. Amen. I'll offer a brief recap for anyone who has not seen the first half of our presentation. Last week, we talked about theodicy, which is the problem of evil. It asks, if we have a God who is all good and all powerful, why does evil happen? And we determined that theodicy is confusifying, indeed, to use the words of Glinda. The three main religions in the land of Oz are unionism, Lurlinism, pleasure faith, and TikTokism. Sorry, that's four, not three. And each character has a role in helping us to explore theodicy, or the problem of evil. Elphaba invites us to ask, what is evil? How do we define wickedness? Glinda helps us to ask, what is goodness? What is moral? Fiero, how does one move from apathy to action? Madame Morrible and the Wizard invite us to ask, who defines evil? How is evil disguised or hidden in plain sight?
And so last week we talked more about the worlds of wicked and these different ideas and philosophies. This week we want to get into some sacred practices and using the story and the canon of wicked as a version of our sacred text. And that might be scary. But it is okay if we believe that we have a God that is in all of creation, then we have a God who is in works of art. And what is it that God can tell us through these works of art? And what is it that we can learn from the wisdom words from other traditions, including the wisdom traditions and religious traditions of Oz?
I also want to say one word about Glinda's outfit here. I'm trying to mirror her purple today. I know that I'm not in pink, which might have been what you expected. But her purple gown in this second film, I think, is really beautiful. And I learned that the beading on the bodice was based on the Fibonacci sequence, which is seen in nature. So that's intended to reflect her ephemeral sort of character. I just thought that was really cool. The details of the costumes in this film are incredible. So using the Fibonacci sequence to design that bead work on her bodice felt worth sort of imitating. We'll start this morning with a practice of Visio Divina. I know I've done this practice with many of you before, and I'll walk us through it. But as a reminder, Visio Divina is a practice of using an image as a source of meditation and wondering. So first, we'll take in the full image, allow your eyes to wander over different parts of it. Then slowly, we'll focus our attention on a piece that's calling to us, and allow us to consider what message the image might be offering you. How is God speaking in that image? You said you want to do the second one?
Sure.
A movie poster. So first, let's take a moment, take in the whole image, allow your eyes to wander over different parts of it. Simply notice. If there's a place that your attention is being drawn, focus in on that point in the image. Thank you. Why does it draw your attention? Is it a color, a texture, a theme that you're noticing? Words, faces? Is there something that might be communicated through that part of the image? It can be a subtle communication, or it can be something profound. What message is the image offering? Okay, I'll invite anyone who's willing or interested to come to the mic and maybe offer a word or two about what you noticed or how this image may have spoken to you. And as if someone wants to make their way to the mic, I'll take a moment to say what I noticed. My eye was drawn to this little cluster of pink flowers. Of course, I was drawn to the pink. Big surprise. But what I was experiencing in that cluster of pink flowers that's among this sort of purple and blue landscape is a reminder of the way that transformation happens. So in part two of Wicked, Glinda, her character arc gets a lot more interesting, and she realizes that she has been the girl in the bubble. So that the pink center that's sort of exploding into these purples and blues just reminds me about the process of transformation and expanding our worldview. Is there anyone who'd like to share their noticing?
I first saw the flying creatures, which maybe are monkeys or other birds, I'm not sure. And then I started to see the movement of Elphaba's cloak. And then when you asked us to like focus on something, my eyes just went straight to the sun. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell if it's rising or setting. And I think there's a reason for that. But you also see the glowing orb in Glinda's wand as well. So that glowing sun and the wand were really the focus points for me.
That's great. Anyone else? No obligation to share, but if there's folks who are interested.
I can share.
Great.
Oh, go ahead, choose.
I was particularly drawn to the weather experience that was happening up near their bodies. And, you know, Glinda's is this very clear, pure blue, whereas around Elphaba, there's the kind of this green, dark clouds, and then also these orange clouds. And when I think of in nature, kind of green, thick clouds, I think of tornadoes. And I'm also interested in the notion that and then underneath the green clouds, that kind of streak of orange looks a lot like fire. Mm. And what I think is interesting is that while it is clearly supposed to be in relationship to Elphaba, the person who controls the weather and has the capability of manipulating the weather is actually sided with the wizard and Glinda. And so it shows that, you know, even though it is associated with Elphaba, things can be manipulated by anyone.
There's a lot to take in this picture, but what drew me right away was the path. Mm-hmm. And it's not a straight path. Mm. It's a very winding path to find out how they're going to exist or coexist or no longer exist.
Yeah. That's great.
What I was drawn to was the dichotomy of the sides, where you've got the black and the green of Elphaba and a lot of foliage. She is green. She hides out in the forest. She's connected to the animals. I find it interesting that green is so much a part of this, because there is a binary in our society that says light is good, dark is bad, black is bad, which feeds into anti-blackness and white supremacy. And the way that Wicked as a whole concept is challenging what do we understand is Wicked, and this theme of green through Elphaba's skin, but then through the Emerald City. Like, Elphaba is cast as the Wicked Witch of the West, but the Emerald City is also all green. The wizard made it green. The military uniforms are green. And it complexifies that a little bit of, well, what is really evil and who is evil? And that Elphaba is cast out as a sole individual, but how much corruption and propaganda is coming out of this other green piece. So I appreciate the complexity and challenging the sort of white-black binary of good and evil.
If you move your mic closer to your face, it will help.
Thank you.
Thanks, y'all. You could look at this and this practice and say, that's sort of a lot to put on an image. And that's okay, that's fair. But Visio Divina can be a great practice to experiment with using all sorts of images if it's of interest to you. Next, we'll talk a bit about the sacred texts as they show up in Oz and in the books, movie, musical world. So first, of course, let's take a look at the Grimmery. So this week, I discovered that the Wicked movie website is incredible. You can explore all of Oz and do that sort of thing where it takes you into a room and you can do the 360 view and zoom in on different stuff. This is how I learned about the Fibonacci sequence in the dress. It's a really great website. So this is sort of silly, but it's fun to look at. So they have a few pictures of the Grimmery here. This is the...
It's not.
Take. Oh, is it not showing up? Okay. I took screenshots of the website in case this happened. So if you go on the website, all of these have sort of moving parts in them. But this gives you the basic overview. So this, of course, is the wings that Elphaba gives Chistri for him to take flight.
Chistri is one of the flying monkeys.
A transformation
spell. And the spell of
binding devotion. So this is the one that Nessarose starts to use on Bach. So just kind of an interesting book to look at. It's noted throughout the universe. One of the things that I find interesting about the Grimmery in particular is the prophecy that the person who is to come and be the Wizard of Oz is someone who will come and be able to read this ancient language that folks aren't able to read anymore. So when the wizard shows up, from our world in his hot air balloon and pretends to read this book by just saying Omaha, which is where he's from.
Except Omaha's Nebraska, not Kansas.
But he's not from Kansas.
Oh.
He's just from this world.
Just the Great Plains.
Yes.
The man from the Great Plains.
So when he's just saying Omaha over and over, people think he's reading this ancient language. But it's interesting the way that prophecy plays in with this special ancient text. Another ancient text that's noted, this is mostly in the books, is the Ozzyad. So this is ancient poetry. And there are some people who would regard this text as something holy, something that teaches them a lot about life and about the world. And then there are others who say it's just a bunch of nursery rhymes. So here we have a dialogue between people who are on a journey together. Otsi operates this sort of caravan business. So she's in contact with people from all over Oz. And I think her response to someone who's quoting the Oziad, she says, "You old fools, the Oziad is just a frilly romantic poem of older, harsher legends. What lives in folk memory is truer than how some artsy poet says it. In folk memory, evil always predates good." Mm-hmm. So this is, they're having a conversation about where evil comes from, why does evil exist? And one person looks to the Oziad, Otsi, who has sort of a challenging life in her own regard, is pretty resistant to that. So different ways that people might interpret a text or see its role in society. Then Otsi continues here and says, "Surely there is a handful of nursery marchin that start once in the middle of a forest, lived an old witch, or the devil was out walking one day and met a child. To the grim poor, there need be no pourquoi tale about where evil arises. It just arises. It always is. One never learns how the witch became wicked or whether that was the right choice for her. It is ever the right choice. Is it ever the right choice? Does the devil ever struggle to be good again? Or if so, is he not a devil? It is, at the very least, a question of definitions." So again, more of this debate about the source of good and evil. There's more to unpack there, but I'll leave you with that. This is why reading the books is kind of a nice supplement for those who have not read the books yet. As I mentioned last week, they're quite long and they're sort of wild, but you get things like this that are kind of interesting.
I find it fascinating how much Gregory Maguire, how much world building, like obviously these are sort of a response to L. Frank Baum's The Wizard of Oz. And if you don't know, The Wizard of Oz is also its own series of like 12 or 13 books. And so the ways that different artists build on the world of Oz in a way that I think plenty of folks also see Lord of the Rings and J.R.R. Tolkien's work, or like Game of Thrones, like just this fantastical world building, but still wrestling with the same questions that we have every single day.
Chronicles of Narnia is another one that comes up when you're researching Wicked. Now we'll look at the text in sacred practice. So looking at the text in the books and in the mostly the movie, but also how some of the moments we see in the musical and film might connect to some of our own sacred story. And we'll try to do this with minimal spoilers. But
can you raise your hand if you have watched the second movie or you have seen, you know, the full show? Okay. We will try to minimize spoilers. To preserve the magic when you get those plot twists.
So this is from part one, or the first act. This is the moment when Glinda and Elphaba go to the wizard's sort of diorama of Oz. And this is where he's testing out the different colors for the road in Oz. Another thing that's on the movie website. You can pick what color you want it to be.
Oh. You could have a pink brick road.
I did make a pink brick road. So in this moment, the wizard takes a figurine of Elphaba from the wizard's sort of castle and offers it to Elphaba, and her response is, "It's green." And she's sort of perplexed by that. Because prior to this moment, she sort of thought that in her interactions with the wizard, she would ask to be made ungreen. So when she sees this, we're not quite sure what's happening in her head, but in some ways it might be an affirmation of her identity, a shifting of her priorities and perspective. But the wizard's response is that your heart's desire to not be green? And Elphaba says no. So this reminds me of the story in Luke 18 when Jesus asks someone in search of healing, "What do you want me to do for you?" And I love this story because we don't often get the moment before the healing where Jesus is having this dialogue with the person who's being healed. Healing can mean a lot of different things. So for someone to be able to have the autonomy to name, this is the healing I'm seeking, in this case, to receive sight. That sort of autonomy is really important. So even though we can problematize the wizard and his character and some of the things that he's up to, the fact that he's able to ask this question, is that your heart's desire, feels significant. Rather than to assume in the way that Glinda does when she first meets Elphaba and says, I plan to major in sorcery and I can fix this problem for you, which no one asked to be fixed and no one called.
No one asked for with skills you don't have.
Yes.
Elphaba really tells her off. It's great.
Yes. But I just appreciate this moment, and it's a moment where we can see some of the humanity in the wizard. That immediately called to mind this healing. Mm-hmm. Okay, you have to be careful on this next one.
I'm ready. So in that first meeting with the wizard, she has to prove herself. She has to prove that she can read the Grimoire, and does the spell which gives Chistery his wings, and she doesn't know it, but it gives all of the monkeys who are the guard of the palace in the Emerald City, it gives all of them their wings. This is the origin story of the flying monkeys of Wizard of Oz. And originally, they are loyal to the wizard. And he lets it slip. He said, oh, these are going to be great spies. And that is when Elphaba realizes he is the one behind all of the animal suppression. And that is when she realizes she's been duped and this is not what she wants. She just asked for him to liberate the animals. And he's out here using her magic to make spies and scouts to go and surveil animals across Oz. So in the second movie, we see that the animals are kept, the monkeys are kept in this like dark tunnel cage.
It almost looks
perch.
Like a silo.
Yeah, like within the palace. And she comes back and is negotiating with the wizard. And Glinda is trying to get her. She's like, just come back. You can do so much good within the system. And she says, all right, you have to prove your worth to me, to the wizard. She says, you have to free these monkeys. And he says, oh, okay, we can do that. And so he goes and he unlocks it. Chistery comes down. He's sort of the leader of these monkeys. And he's like, is this real? Are you sure we're not going to be punished? Because in the prior movie, Madame Morrible threatens their whole families and says, if you don't stay with the wizard, we will take your families. So he wants to be extra sure. And it says, yes. So then all the monkeys come out of this column, this cage. It's really dark. They're literally hidden away within the walls of the palace. And they all come flying out with their liberation. But Chistery comes back. And the wizard is off wizarding, getting ready for a wedding. And Chistery comes back to Elphaba and says, there's more that you need to see. You need to see that there are other animals still in cages. And as I was sitting in the theater watching this, it immediately brought to mind this text from Luke 17, where Jesus heals the 10 lepers, and only one of them returns and says, thank you. So one of the lepers returns, sees that he's healed, turns back, praises God with a loud voice, and thanks Jesus. And Jesus asks, where are these other nine? Did none of them return to give glory? And Jesus says, go out, your faith has made you well. The interesting thing I see about this is that Chistery is the one who returns, and his faith makes him well, and then his immediate action is to go make other people free, is to go heal other people. He says, it is for me, and I'm grateful for what has happened to me and my monkeys, but there are other animals still in danger, and you can do something about it. And I think that is a powerful message of what happens when we get free, when we find a piece of healing. What do we then do with that? Do we relish it and luxuriate in it? Sometimes. But then how does that impact how we act out in the world? And how do we continue to use what we have to get other people free and to make other people whole and healed?
Also, Chistri's character in the second part, just like, he gets my heart.
We love Chistri.
Yes. So next, we'll use the text as a source for some Lectio Divina. So this might be a more familiar practice to folks than the Visio Divina we started with. Normally, you would do this with a Bible passage or some other sacred text. But the first step is always to read the text slowly, listening for a word or a phrase that invites your attention. Then you rest with that word and meditate on it. Pray and join God in conversation. And finally, continue to rest in God's presence, which might include wondering what comes next for you from this reflection. So for copyright reasons, we cannot play the song for you. We also will not perform the song for you.
I'm sorry, I was prepared for that.
But we'll look at For Good, which is a really beautiful, moving song, the source of the name for the second part of the movie. I've included a lot of text from the song, but I think that we have to focus in. So we'll use this first part. So just, you're welcome to close your eyes or read along if you like, but I'll read it. And just see what word or phrase speaks to you. I've heard it said that people come into our lives for a reason, bringing something we must learn. And we are led to those who help us most to grow if we let them. And we help them in return. Well, I don't know if I believe that's true, but I know I'm who I am today because I knew you. Like a comet pulled from orbit as it passes a sun, like a stream that meets a boulder halfway through the wood. Who can say if I've been changed for the better? But because I knew you, I have been changed for good. What word or phrase stood out to you? If you call it out, I can repeat it so folks can hear, if you don't want to go all the way to the mic. Because I knew you.
Mm-hmm. Change for the better.
Change for the better.
But I know
I am who I am today. Like a comet pulled from orbit. We'll read it a second time. Continue to rest with that word or phrase that was sticking out to you. Sort of meditate on what that means in the context of the whole, what it means for you.
Mm-hmm. I have heard it said that people come into our lives for a reason, bringing something we must learn. And we are led to those who help us most to grow if we let them and we help them in return. Well, I don't know if I believe that's true, but I know I'm who I am today because I knew you. Like a comet pulled from orbit as it passes a sun, like a stream that meets a boulder halfway through the wood. Who can say if I've been changed for the better? But because I knew you, I have been changed for good.
I wonder if anything more came up as you hear it a second time. like a stream that meets a boulder. If we let them. Help them in return.
We are led to those who help us most to grow.
We'll read it one more time and see if there's a prayer that bubbles up for you. Allow this to be a moment of conversation with God as you hear these words. I've heard it said that people come into our lives for a reason, bringing something we must learn. And we are led to those who help us most to grow, if we let them, and we help them in return. Well, I don't know if I believe that's true, but I know I'm who I am today because I knew you. Like a comet pulled from orbit as it passes a sun, like a stream that meets a boulder halfway through the wood. Who can say if I've been changed for the better? But because I knew you, I have been changed for good. Is there a prayer that arises for anyone? I'm praying in Thanksgiving for my best friend, who definitely helped me to learn and grow a lot, especially in college. Much like Glinda, I was the girl in the bubble. Probably still am to a degree. But she helped me to break free from that a bit. So I'm praying in Thanksgiving.
It makes me grateful for the people in my life who have challenged me too, those who are perhaps the more frustrating people in my life, to give it maybe a lens of there's a way that they're here to help me grow as well.
For me, it's that I would pray to notice what's before me in my life, as opposed to trying to figure everything out proactively, or that noticing, letting in.
Mm-hmm. I think meditating on the part, if we let them, it brings to mind like asking God to help you be more open and to be more willing to let others in and to influence you.
I'm praying that God continues to surprise me and being open to those surprises. As I had a very literal experience of this just this weekend, I was hiking in Virginia by myself and moved to the side on the trail as two people and their two dogs walked past me. And as we did about a triple take, I realized I knew the person on the trail and that we had gone to high school together and I hadn't seen them in 15 years. And I live in DC and they live in North Carolina, and we met on the side of a mountain in Virginia and got to reconnect and like remember who I was at that moment and how this person had been a part of my life. And that's so surprising.
We have just a couple minutes, so I'll open it up if there's any comments or questions, either about this practice or more generally, about what we've talked about with Wicked.
I've not seen either movie yet, although apparently that's in my future.
Aren't you ready? You're ready now.
But I keep turning over the end of the text on the screen of who can say if I've been changed for the better, but because I knew you, I have been changed for good. And I keep turning that over in terms of, you know, better, good, are these different things, or is it like for better? No, definitely good. Or is it a, you know, who can say, which is a very, you know, what do people say about what, how I've changed versus I know I've been changed for good. So there's a lot in there, and it just makes me think about how just the words matter. Mm-hmm. And it just really makes me think about more than just reading through it once and saying, hey, that's it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot there.
And the multiple meanings of for good in a time sense that I've been changed more permanently, too.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe. At the end of the song, which we didn't get to because it'd be a lot to read over multiple times, they do say, who can say if I've been changed for the better? I do believe I've been changed for the better. Just a beautiful moment. Any other comments, questions?
I saw the musical a long time ago. I just started reading the book last week, so thank you for inspiring me. And I haven't seen any of the movies yet because I have small children, and 3 hours is a long time to sit down and watch something.
Yes. Fair.
But I'm wondering, first, if anyone has watched interviews of Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo, because they are so connected. And you can tell how their relationship has been molded, and they've been kind of bonded forever because of this experience filming this movie. And then my second question is, Adeline, why do you like Glinda?
Oh,
this is a great question. I'll answer the harder question first, which is, why do I like Glinda? A part of it is just that I love pink. So some of it is just like very surface level. But I also am willing to admit the ways that I am like Glinda. And I know that there are many ways that I am complicit in the empire, as Glinda is. I hope that over the course of my lifetime, I exhibit some change and growth. I hope that for all of us. But I see some of her arc in my life, too. So some of it is just wanting to be willing to admit that. And that it is the relationships that I'm in that help me to change and to expand my worldview. We start to see her getting there over the course of the musical or the movies. There's still more for her to do and to learn, as there is for me. So I identify with her. I also love pink. So sort of a surface level and a little deeper. As far as the interviews with Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo, the two of them are amazing together. Do you want to talk about the tattoos?
Yes. I want to talk about that tattoos. So both Cynthia and Ariana got hand tattoos that say for good, and that where they are placed is like where their hands meet as they're in that scene. And I think hearing in some of the interviews that they both have lots of tattoos and do that in important moments. And as I've heard John Chu talk about it, John M. Chu, the director, he was like, you can wait to get these tattoos until like it's over. This is like a 3-year process at this point. They got those tattoos like week 3. And another interview piece that's interesting, this is sort of the emotional climax of the entire story. When Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo met for the first time, it was, and they both been cast in these roles, but they had not met, they had not connected on this work yet. They went to John M. Chu's house, and it was John M. Chu, Stephen Schwartz, Cynthia, and Ariana, and they just sang this song together. Like, that was their first meeting, and it all just clicked. And this song is so magical and beautiful, and hearing them. And there was also, Cynthia talks about in the recording that their voices were so aligned that, like, if you look at their parts on a computer, they were making the exact same motions, which is unheard of. So there's clearly some spiritual connection, sonic connection between them, and the way that their voices blend that is changing them for good.
We'll end there. Thanks, y'all.
Thanks, everyone.